So if a typical, month-long corporate training program is kind of like downloading a new app to your phone, finding a mentor is like upgrading your entire operating
Oh,
system.
absolutely. It's a total foundational rewrite.
Right. And that is exactly what we are getting into today. Welcome to the deep dive. We're looking at this really fascinating document from June 20, 2026.
Yeah, titled Mentoring: The Invisible Architecture of a Meaningful Life.
Which is just a great title. But what makes this material so compelling for you as a listener isn't just the title, it's who actually wrote it. I mean, you'd expect this deeply philosophical take on human connection to come from like a life coach or maybe a sociologist.
But it doesn't.
No, it comes from a hardcore customer experience and business transformation leader.
Which is just the perfect lens for this topic, honestly.
Yeah.
We're getting the perspective of someone whose entire professional identity revolves around delivering what they call triple crown benefits.
Right, the business jargon. What does that actually mean in practice?
Well, in the corporate world, it means driving revenue growth, executing cost reduction, and managing service uplift.
So metrics, spreadsheets.
Exactly. It's a world of optimizing massive organizational machines.
Yeah.
And yet, the core thesis they present here is, well, it's remarkably vulnerable.
It really is.
They're arguing that this soft, incredibly hard to quantify human connection we call mentoring is the actual invisible architecture that gives a career its meaning.
And that contrast is exactly what hooked me. You have this person who lives and breathes efficiency, essentially arguing that we are focusing on the wrong things when we try to grow.
Right.
So my question right out of the gate is, why do we settle for these clean 30-day corporate training programs when, like the author claims, a true mentorship is what actually rewires our identity and helps us navigate the real complexity?
Well, I think it comes down to how organizations, and honestly, how we as individuals, just naturally prefer to measure progress.
This is easier.
Yeah, a training program is highly transactional. It's comforting. You invest 30 days, you pass a test, you get a certificate, and boom, you learn a new standard operating procedure.
Very linear input and output.
Right. But navigating the genuine chaos of a long career, that requires a fundamental shift in who you are, not just a simple addition to what you know.
Hence the operating system upgrade analogy.
Exactly. Mentoring achieves that identity level rewiring.
Yeah.
But to really grasp why it functions that way, we first have to strip away the cultural cliches of what mentoring actually looks like in practice.
Oh, totally. Because I think for most of you listening, the word mentoring probably instantly conjures up a very specific, slightly awkward mental
The
image.
coffee shop meeting.
Yes. You picture a quiet coffee shop, two people sitting across from each other, and the older, more senior person is just sort of dispensing career
Like
advice.
a sage.
Right. It's a handful of coffee meetings, maybe a few pointers on how to negotiate a raise, handing over a LinkedIn connection. It feels very transactional, almost like a consulting arrangement.
And that false persona of mentoring is entirely dismantled in this material. Viewing mentorship simply as giving advice just completely misunderstands the mechanism of action.
So how does the source redefine it?
They say true mentorship quietly, persistently changes who we are and who we believe we can become. Great mentors basically operate on two parallel tracks at the same time.
Okay, what's the first track?
On the first track, they help you do your best work today. They guide you through the immediate practical hurdles of your current role.
Okay, that makes sense. Standard advice stuff.
Right. But on the second track, which is far more critical, they actively expand your vision of what is possible for you tomorrow.
Oh, wait, they don't just like drop this grand new vision of your future into your lap and walk away, right? Because that would just be overwhelming.
No. And that is the defining difference between a mentor and a motivational speaker. A mentor sticks around long enough to make that expanded vision your new normal.
Ah, the consistency.
Exactly. They provide the vocabulary for ambitions you've only felt, but maybe never articulated. They call out your strengths long before you have the confidence to trust them yourself.
The material actually describes this as holding a mirror up to the deeply ingrained stories we tell ourselves about why we aren't good enough.
And then quietly asking, what if that story simply isn't true?
See, I have to jump in and push back on that on behalf of the listener.
Sure.
Holding a mirror to our self-limiting stories, challenging deep personal insecurities, doesn't that sound a bit more like intensive psychotherapy than career development?
It does. The line feels blurry, and that's a very fair challenge. But this deep identity level work is precisely the foundational structure used when building like elite coaching certifications or executive renewal
Okay,
frameworks.
so it's not clinical therapy.
No, it's not aimed at healing past trauma just to function in daily life, but it is undeniably psychological. It's about identifying and removing the internal friction that stops a highly capable professional from reaching their actual potential.
Because if the friction is there, the skills don't matter.
Think about it mechanically. If you firmly believe you're not leadership material because of some narrative you internalized a decade ago, no amount of management training is going to fix that.
No new app will run on a corrupted operating system.
Bingo. You need someone to help you rewrite that base code so the new skills actually have somewhere to install.
I see where this is going. Because true mentorship digs into these deep, self-limiting stories rather than just, you know, polishing a resume, the behavioral impact on the mentee is radically transformed on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, absolutely. If you trace the path of any standout career, you inevitably find a mentor standing right at the critical inflection points.
Those pivotal moments of intervention.
Yeah. A mentor is the person who looks at a terrifying, complex opportunity and tells you to apply anyway.
Or they tell you you're ready when you feel entirely unprepared.
Exactly. Or they point out that you are thinking way too small about your next move. They're the ones who give you a chance or advocate for you to get a chance before you ever appear, quote unquote, qualified on paper.
And there's significant behavioral research backing up why this works, right?
Mm-hmm.
The material mentions mentees taking more calculated risks.
Yes. They weather professional setbacks and failures much better than their peers.
Because they know they aren't alone.
Right, because they have a safety net. The psychological knowledge that someone you deeply respect believes in your capacity, it just builds a remarkably resilient professional identity.
A mentor is very often the very first person to interact with you, not as the junior employee you currently are, but as the formidable person you are becoming.
And that early validation completely rewires your confidence.
Which is amazing, but that brings up a fascinating tension for me. What does this profound psychological rewiring mean for the bottom line?
The spreadsheet question.
Yeah, because the author explicitly argues that mentoring changes careers in tangible dollars and cents on a spreadsheet. But if the ultimate value of a mentor is having someone see who you are becoming, how can a business, or you as a listener, ever accurately measure that return on investment? You can't put identity validation in a quarterly earnings report.
No, you can't. And this is where we have to shift how we measure value in a corporate structure. You're correct that the exact moment a mentor shifts, a mentee's perspective isn't a line item.
Right.
But the downstream result of that psychological shift is highly measurable.
Give me a concrete example.
Okay, let's look at a mechanism. Imagine a mid-level engineer who spots a critical flaw in a massive project. If they're operating on their old, self-limiting base code, they might stay quiet, right? Fearing they'll be fired for speaking out of turn.
Yeah, just keep your head down.
But if a mentor has rewired their identity to view themselves as a leader, that engineer speaks up. They halt the project, fix the flaw, and literally save the company millions of dollars in eventual product recalls.
Oh, wow.
That empowered action absolutely translates to dollars and cents. It reduces turnover, it accelerates innovation, it builds a resilient pipeline.
So the financial ROI on a spreadsheet is just the lagging indicator of the mentor's identity shift.
Exactly. The spreadsheet is just capturing the echo of the mentoring, not the mentoring itself.
That makes total sense. But, you know, if the long game for the mentee is impressive, the material flips the script entirely when looking at the mentor. It turns out the person giving the advice might actually be reaping the greatest rewards of all.
We really have to dismantle the myth of one-way wisdom here.
Mm-hmm.
Society loves the narrative of the stoic mentor residing on a mountaintop, magically bestowing nuggets of wisdom onto grateful, passive mentees.
The Yoda complex.
Yes, the Yoda complex. But the reality is far more reciprocal. When you genuinely invest your time and energy into someone else's growth, you inevitably change your own trajectory too.
How so? If you're the senior expert, shouldn't you be perfectly comfortable in your knowledge base?
You'd assume so, but the mechanics of teaching are messy. As a mentor, you frequently find yourself having to teach skills you didn't even realize you knew.
Like things you just do on autopilot.
Right. Psychologists call it unconscious competence. You just do things instinctively. But when a mentee asks how you do it, you're forced to deconstruct your own intuition and articulate it clearly. and that is incredibly difficult.
It forces you out of your comfort zone.
Furthermore, mentees will ask questions about foundational topics you learned 20 years ago, which forces you to realize that your base assumptions might be completely outdated.
Wow, yeah. So caring about a junior colleague's professional growth fundamentally stress tests your own perspective.
It humbles you and rejuvenates you at the same time. You realize you're learning just as much as you're teaching. And the source notes, it reconnects you to the very reasons you entered your profession in the first place.
Which leads to this wild thought. So the source is essentially saying that the best cure for mid-career burnout isn't a 2-week vacation to the Bahamas. It's actually taking on a mentee.
That is a profound way to frame it. A vacation is merely an escape from the work. Mentoring is a reconnection to the meaning of the work.
Because burnout is rarely just physical exhaustion.
Almost never. It's almost always tied to a loss of purpose. You feel like a cog in the machine. But when you look at your industry through the fresh, ambitious eyes of a mentee, and you realize you have the tangible power to help them navigate it, that feeling of meaning is deeply restorative.
The material actually notes that most seasoned professionals wouldn't trade that feeling for any promotion or bonus.
Absolutely not.
Now, it's easy to talk about this in the abstract, but I'm trying to picture what it looks like when a hardcore spreadsheets and metrics executive actually goes through this identity shift. Does this business transformation leader give any examples of the mentors who rewired them?
They do. They actually open up their playbook and provide a hall of fame. It's a concrete, highly diverse list of mentors who made their career completely unrecognizable.
Let's walk through these because I think it illustrates the mechanics of mentorship perfectly. First up, they credit Stephen Andreas.
Stephen Andreas is a fascinating starting point. He was a major figure in NLP or neuro-linguistic programming.
Which sounds very academic.
It does. But what Andreas imparted wasn't a business strategy. It was the mechanical understanding of how our language creates our reality. He demonstrated how self-limiting beliefs are locked in by the specific words we use.
What does that actually look like in practice, though, like affirmations?
Sort of, but deeper. Think about the internal monologue of a professional facing a challenge. If a mentee tells themselves, "I am not an innovator," that language creates a permanent state of identity in the brain.
Oh, I see.
Andreas taught that you can mechanically shift that reality by changing the language to, "I haven't developed my innovation skills yet."
Wow. It moves the brain from a state of permanent deficiency to a state of temporary, solvable growth.
Exactly. Andreas showed the author that you can literally rewrite the base code of human potential just by changing the vocabulary a person uses to describe their own life.
That is incredibly powerful. And then immediately after Andreas, they list Sir Ken Robinson. Now, Robinson is a massive name, but specifically in the world of education and the arts.
Which seems totally disconnected from business transformation.
Right.
Until you look at the mechanism. Robinson convinced the author that creativity is not just a nice-to-have artistic skill. He reframed creativity as an absolute organizational survival mechanism.
How does creativity save an organization?
Well, in a rigid corporate machine, when supply chain A breaks down, a purely logical, rigid thinker freezes. But a creative thinker sees three alternative, unconventional paths to the exact same goal.
So Robinson taught that if you want organizations to really flourish, you have to design environments where creative problem solving is rewarded, not punished.
Precisely.
Okay, I'm seeing a pattern start to form here, because next on the list is Charles Handy, who spent decades writing about meaningful work. The material states that Handy forced the author to treat organizations less like machines to optimize and more like communities of human beings.
And that represents a total paradigm shift for an executive whose job title involves cost reduction.
It really does.
The mechanical logic here is brilliant, though. If you treat a company like a machine, you assume you can just pull levers, cut a budget here, increase a quota there, and get a predictable output.
But machines break when you push them past their limits. They don't have discretionary effort.
Exactly. Handy's mentorship shifted the author to view the workplace as a community. Communities, unlike machines, are capable of rallying.
Right. When a community faces a crisis, people volunteer extra effort. They support each other.
They innovate organically. By focusing on the human community, you actually achieve better, more sustainable triple crown business benefits than you ever could by just pulling levers.
That just shatters the idea that soft skills don't drive hard metrics. But I have to say, My absolute favorite mentor on this list is Wilf Proudfoot.
Oh, Wilf is incredible.
The author describes him as an unlikely Olympian who somehow went on to become a DJ, a member of parliament, and a high street store owner. Wilf's resume sounds like someone hitting randomize on a video game character creation screen.
It really does.
And this totally shatters the listener's assumption that you have to find a mentor who works in your exact specific industry to get value out of them, right?
It shatters it entirely.
Yeah.
If you only seek mentors in your specific vertical, you only learn how to climb that specific ladder.
So what did the author learn from the DJ slash politician?
What the author learned from Wilf Proudfoot wasn't tactical advice on how to run a retail store or DJ at a club. Wilf provided a masterclass in nonlinear reinvention. He proved mechanically that adulthood is not a single locked-in track. You are never too old to completely reinvent your identity and pivot to a new domain.
And that ability to shed an old identity and adapt to a new one is a meta skill. It makes you fearless.
Because you know that no single failure defines your entire life.
Exactly. And finally, the material points to Virginia Satir, a pioneer in family therapy. The author credits her with teaching them firsthand how healing trauma fundamentally changes who we become as professionals.
This is perhaps the deepest architectural work mentioned. We rarely discuss trauma in the boardroom.
No, almost never. That's heavy stuff for a corporate setting.
It is, but early childhood dynamics and unhealed traumas frequently replicate themselves in corporate
Yeah,
environments.
for sure.
An executive's desperate need to micromanage or their absolute terror of workplace conflict is rarely about the actual business problem. It's often an unhealed coping mechanism from their past.
So Satir demonstrated that when you guide a person to heal those root traumas, you don't just fix their personal life.
You unlock an entirely new level of authentic, fearless professional leadership.
Looking at this entire list, I mean, Andreas on language, Robinson on creativity, Handy on community, Proudfoot on reinvention, and Satir on trauma, none of these people gave the author tactical business advice. They didn't review spreadsheets.
No, they didn't.
The crucial takeaway here is that they changed this executive's entire trajectory because they cared enough to invest in them as a person.
It is a masterclass in diverse inputs. The author synthesized neurolinguistics, creative theory, sociology, nonlinear life paths, and trauma healing, and deliberately imported those deeply human elements into the hard-nosed world of corporate transformation.
Mentoring is the invisible thread that allowed all of those diverse operating systems to integrate into one highly effective leader.
Exactly. And seeing the profound, expansive impact of these mentors brings us directly to the final personal challenge this document lays out for you, the listener.
What's the challenge?
Well, the author arrives at a very poignant observation after reflecting on their own career. When all is said and done, the chapters of our professional stories that actually endure the things we remember long after retirement, they aren't the accomplishment.
They aren't the promotions or the revenue growth or the cost reductions.
No. The only things that truly endure are the people. It's the mentors who believed in us when we were lost, and the mentees who continue to challenge our assumptions years after we assumed we had mastered our craft.
Right.
Because of that reality, the author extends a specific invitation to you.
And the challenge is to take 30 seconds today and think of the people who have mentored you. And do not limit this to formal bosses or assigned corporate coaches.
Right. Think of the teachers, the family, friends.
Or the random acquaintances who simply saw something in you, gave you a new vocabulary for your potential, and pushed you to be better. Name them. And if they are still around, reach out and thank them.
It's a powerful exercise in gratitude, but it fundamentally serves as an exercise in awareness. Because the second half of this invitation flips the lens entirely onto your own behavior.
Yeah, you have to take another moment and think carefully about the people you are currently mentoring.
And the catch is, you might be mentoring someone right now without even realizing it.
I love this part. The material highlights this brilliant concept of unintentional mentoring. Simply because you care deeply about the quality of the work you do and because of the ethical standards you uphold in the office, someone junior is watching you.
You are serving as their model.
You're actively expanding their vision of what is possible in this industry, even if you have never formally agreed to get coffee with them.
The question the author leaves us with is a heavy one.
Right.
What chapter of their story are you having to write? Once you realize you're an unintentional mentor, you have to take responsibility for the invisible architecture you are building in someone else's life.
It changes how you carry yourself entirely. And I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over that builds on everything we have unpacked today.
Go for it.
Think about the mechanics of what we just discussed. Virginia Satir taught this author about healing trauma. Stephen Andreas taught them how to rewrite self-limiting language. Now, this author is taking those exact lessons and unintentionally mentoring hundreds of other employees by weaving those concepts into massive corporate business transformations.
It creates an ongoing chain reaction.
It is the mentorship ripple effect. Think about how many generations of young professionals are currently operating on the invisible, unintentional wisdom of a mentor they will never even meet.
Wow, yeah. Sir Ken Robinson's views on creativity are probably shaping the career of a junior analyst right this very second, simply because this author integrated Robinson's worldview into a new training framework.
Exactly. So as you go about your week, ask yourself, what invisible legacy are you leaving in the people that your mentees will eventually go on to guide? Remember, if standard training is just downloading a new app, you actually have the power to help someone upgrade their entire operating system. You just have to care enough to invest in them as a person.